you will increase your efficiency 20% if you learn to do the tough things first, the ones you don't want to do.
Ray Zinn now imparts his management philosophy in Tough Things First. In this series, Zinn covers it all, from the essence of human happiness,
adding value, showing that you have value,
to the downside of venture capital.
You will not own the company.
And the essence of entrepreneurial discipline.
If you're going to make it a consistent practice of working Saturdays just because you think you've got to work 80 hours a week to be successful, you're just flat out wrong.
Now here's Ray Zinn, Silicon Valley's longest serving CEO.
Welcome to another Tough Things First podcast. We're excited today to talk about this very special topic, sexual harassment. And to that end, we have a very special guest. My name is Ray Zinn.
And I'm Delana Zinn. And I'd like to introduce our very special guest for today's podcast, who is Ethan Barron from the San Jose Mercury News. A little background on Ethan. He is a business reporter with the Mercury News and a native of Silicon Valley before it was ever known as Silicon Valley. He has worked as a reporter, a columnist, editor, and a photographer in the newspapers and magazines for over 25 years, covering business, politics, social issues, crime, the environment, outdoor sports, war, and humanitarian crisis. Most recently, though, he's been covering a very volatile topic of sexual harassment, which is why he is with us today. So welcome, Ethan.
Just love to get your take on this whole topic of sexual harassment. You know, I ran a company, my company, Micrel Semiconductor, for 37 years. And of course, during the 37 years, we had a number of sexual harassment issues that we had to deal with. And it's a painful topic, and it always concerned us. But for some reason or other that we want to get your take on, it has taken a different presence now. I'm sure that companies like Micrel, the one I ran, had this problem for years. But why now? Why? What has now caused this topic to come to the forefront? So could you kind of help us with that, Ethan?
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. I think that this has been a problem that has been in existence for, as long as the technology industry has been here in Silicon Valley and probably in the defense industry before that. And it just was, it was largely unseen except by the direct participants, because in a lot of cases they weren't talking about it. I have a friend who worked for a major tech company 30 years ago here in Silicon Valley, who was pushed up against a wall in the middle of the workday in the office by a superior, and she just managed to kind of struggle her way away from the guy, but was too afraid to say anything about it because of the consequences she could face in her career. I think that's been one of the biggest obstacles to women actually revealing when they've been mistreated by men and when they've been, victimized by sexual misconduct. The big difference now is that we're all looking at it, and we're all looking at it because women have spoken out about it, I think you can sort of you can trace it back. And we should sort of look at the tech industry in particular as something that's got its unique qualities that perhaps have fostered environments that allowed this to go on for a long time without people pushing back as much. You know, it's Silicon Valley. The tech industry is overwhelmingly male. When you get large groups of men, whether it's sports teams or militaries, the police departments, fire departments, you tend to get pushback against women when they start to make inroads into those fields. And so, it's the boys' club that's sort of being invaded by the girls, and some of the boys aren't so happy about that. And then you also have the power dynamics that lead men in positions of advantage to take advantage of women for sexual purposes. It's a very ugly look that nobody wants to be associated with, especially today when this is a big topic. So I think it really the media attention has probably led to considerable kind of changes in the way people think about it, and And also in policy changes, and it's just hard to say how effective those new policies or evolved policies will be in tamping down the problem.
Women are more willing to speak up. So do you think that the social media is also playing a bigger role in enabling women to speak up?
I think it does. I mean, I think women can find support on social media. They can find information on social media. It can be an outlet for them to make allegations, as Susan Fowler did on Medium. And it's also social media is being used to organize events, around Me Too and the Women's March. So you have you have an amplification. You also have, the ability for women to network on these issues. And there's a huge amount of that goes on. And it's also, the attention to this issue has led to development of all these kind of groups that are they're women in tech groups of one sort or another. Mm-hmm. And most of them are dealing with these issues of, harassment and mistreatment in one way or another. So social media has kind of helped foster the growth of all those kinds of organizations and the connections of women, and really mm-hmm. sort of allowed women to kind of understand the issue better and organize with each other and support each other in pushing back against what's been decades of male dominated treatment or male dominated policies in the workplace, the male centered workplaces that so many women kind of felt foreign in, it's not even, one of the biggest things that women complain about, the women in tech that I speak to about this is, the harassment is common enough, but what's even more common are things like being talked over in meetings or just not being listened to or having your ideas ignored or diminished because they come from a woman.
Yeah.
It's sort of the everyday things. And so you see a lot of talk about those kind of everyday problems, gender-related problems for women. There's a lot of that on social media, a lot of women kind of sharing stories and talking about how to respond to it. I think it's really playing a big role in that. And how much that's encouraging women to speak up, I don't know. I would suspect that it does. There is the potential of legal liability, and I think that that's an issue that it's women are just gonna, that you look at Morgan Freeman, who's been the focus misconduct,
right,
allegations, and he's demanding a retraction from the New York Times for their reporting on this. This is the way things could go for women if they, if a woman publicly comes out and points her finger at a company or at a particular person in that company and says, this happened to me, this person did it, this company failed to respond. The same thing could happen theoretically. If the company is willing to take the risk of fighting back, the woman could be destroyed. She could be she could be hit with a massive penalty in a lawsuit. She could have her reputation destroyed if she's not able to, prove her case, which is, pretty hard when it's a kind of he said, she said situation.
But, this podcast are going to go to people who are running companies. And I think that with the intense coverage or the highlighting and spotlighting of the issue may have false accusations or at least not important accusations coming out on this. So what can companies do to protect themselves from your experience, Ethan, in this?
That's an excellent question, because there will undoubtedly be cases, and there undoubtedly are cases where as you referred to before, there could just be kind of workplace animosity that leads to false claims that are just intended to harm a man who may have not done anything improper at all,
or the company. It could be more than to harm the company.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, if someone makes a false claim and then says, and the company failed to respond to my allegations, well, the company the company shouldn't be responding, against someone as a response to false claims. I think, and what you were talking about with the HR investigation, I think, it's really important for companies, if they're charging their HR department with investigating these kinds of claims, they need to really make sure that their HR department knows that they need to be, essentially impartial about that, because mm-hmm. the perception out there is among workers that if you go to HR, HR is on the side of the company. And they're going to do everything they can to protect the company at, essentially at your expense. And that can turn out badly. A lot of these cases where it ultimately comes out, that there was a problem at a company and the company failed to address it properly when it was happening. And, a lot of times the HR department is implicated in that. The women say, I went to HR about that. And they say, yeah. It's just the way he is, or you've got to develop a thicker skin. Or, we've talked to people and there's really not a problem, so you need to quiet down about this. I think it's really important that companies take these kinds of allegations seriously from the start.
Absolutely.
As you were speaking of, with what your HR department did at McCrell, and then you can have some confidence that if you've got the right people doing it and they know that their job is to find out what really happened and report on that, mm-hmm. then you've sort of got the system in place that you're sort of doing what you can for this. And the other side of it is having really clear policies on what's acceptable and what's not.
Yep. We had a video. We actually had to watch a training session on that. And what we also told them, told HR would tell the person who's bringing the charges that if they didn't like the way that their case was being handled, they could always kick it upstairs. And so we did have that open door policy that if you didn't like the outcome, you could still kick it upstairs. And ultimately, it might come to me as a CEO, and then I'd have to then deal with it. So that is another way that the employee can feel comfortable. Again, they have to feel comfortable with the CEO too, but that's another way to ensure is give that employee a chance to kick it upstairs, as they say. With all the spotlighting on sexual harassment in the media, do you see it increasing or decreasing? Is this going to kind of be a fad that's just kind of go away after people are tired of hearing about it? What's the thinking of the media industry on this one?
Yeah, that's a really important question. We track our reader, viewer numbers on every story here. And I can say that when all the stories about sexual harassment in the venture capital industry started coming out, about VCs here in Silicon Valley, there was a lot of interest at the start in that among the readers, and then the more cases that came out, the interest sort of waned, and that's normal. An issue first breaks into the news, lots of people are like, wow, this is new, that's very interesting, and they're going to read about it, and then it becomes sort of a routine thing. And so there is the likelihood that there's been some kind of reduction in interest in the issue. The Women's March and the Me Too movement have really sort of created this national and even global kind of environment where the issue is kind of at the forefront of a lot of people's minds as one of the kind of profound problems affecting workplaces and social dynamics and women's lives and women's work. And then you had Susan Fowler, who, very courageously put herself out there with a blog post about sexual harassment at Uber. And that sort of like ratcheted up all the attention on this issue and made people, sort of have to concede, even if they were reluctant to see this as a problem, to say, wow, this is pretty serious graphic stuff that's being alleged here. Essentially turned out to, if you look at what happened within the company, it appears that her allegations were probably on target. to a large extent. And so, you know, and then, and I think it was probably Fowler's blog post that opened the floodgates to you know, a lot more allegations. You had women coming forward and saying they'd been sexually harassed by venture capitalists who had sort of developed this kind of funding couch approach to investing in female founder led companies, and you know, basically using their position of power in the purse strings to create sexual opportunities for themselves. And then, you know, so you had a whole bunch of tech people that then were being called out for you know, misconduct, even sexual assault, you know, inappropriate relationships with subordinates. You know, this hit VC firms, it hit Google, it hit like a major startup incubator. You know, with the CEO of one calling himself a creep and, you know, sort of prostrating himself, and, you know, admitting to his multiple inappropriate advances toward women. And so, yeah, I think that's how we've gotten here. And it's sort of remarkable to me too, because the women take a considerable risk in making public allegations.
Yeah.
You know, serious public allegations that can destroy people's careers, and you know, it seems that what's happened is that the men who have been the focus of these allegations have you know, probably realized that if they fight back, it's gonna look bad no matter what, unless they can come up with some pretty compelling evidence that they're, you know, they're guilt free. And on the other side of it, you know, it may well be that you know, a lot of these men saw that they were in fact guilty as charged, and that there were other women who would come forward and support these women. So there would be sort of a body of evidence against them if they were to kind of push back too much. But and I think the pushback is something, the potential pushback and legal liability and career liability, those are things that are probably deterring women every day here in Silicon Valley from actually, you know, taking that step and going public with ill treatment at the hands of you know, male colleagues and superiors.
Well, you know, at Mike Krell, Ethan, we had people come forward with charges, you know, sexual harassment charges, and we dealt with them pretty harshly. I mean, we had a zero tolerance for it. We had I know a couple of our supervisors got canned over it, and so we took action. We actually you know, a few cases, they were, to me at least, when we looked into it, we would always, for example, we'd have HR investigate it, and we typically would put a female HR person in charge rather than a male, just to give the female more, you know, the person charging sexual harassment, make them feel more at ease, you know, with talking with a female representative rather than a male. So we had, you know, them investigated. Sometimes there were legitimate ones, we took action. But do you see now that because of the focus and the highlight that that the media is putting on the spotlight, I mean, on the sexual harassment, that more companies are taking a more proactive stance or not? What's your feeling on that?
It looks to me as if they are, you know, that they're doing training and they are creating policies that, you know, sort of lay out what's proper and what's not and what the consequences are for improper behavior. You know, the degree of commitment to those policies and consequences, you know, is hard to assess, because, you know, when it comes down to it, you know, when you were at McCrell, if you're gonna come down on a male employee as a result of that person's treatment of a female employee, you know, you have the potential to lose a talented man. You know, it can do some damage to the company in that way. What made it worth it for you to take those kind of actions? Because it seems, you know, a lot of companies, until this sort of became a visible issue, a lot of companies were doing their best to kind of not take action. And it was often the women would end up either, you know, sometimes they'd get canned, sometimes they would just leave, and sometimes leave the industry altogether. What was your kind of rationale for taking the risk of taking action against this stuff?
Well, it was no issue. It was we had a, as I said, a zero tolerance for sexual harassment. Two of the cases were brought against us after the women had actually left the company. I wasn't even aware of their charge of sexual harassment until we got notification of it through the court. Obviously, they were willing to come forward because we had them. I mean, I can't tell you how many we had. I mean, we had more than one. I mean, several, you know, of these cases. They apparently didn't feel ill at ease talking about it. I mean, I know because we had to deal with them. So, but maybe it was because we did have a zero tolerance, and they just felt that they would be protected. We had one of the lowest turnovers and with our employees in the industry, half what the industry suffered, you know. So I think they felt more at home, they felt safer at Micrel. I'm speaking now from me being the CEO, so you have to take that into consideration. But certainly we did deal with it, and we had no problem. We just, you know, I value women. I mean, I've been married 57 years, and so my relationship with my family and my wife are extremely important. So, that being said,
Let me just answer your other question there. About the media attention, and I think that that's done a couple of things. Is one, it's just kind of informed people that this is an issue because, you know, if it's invisible, even, you know, if people aren't talking about it, if people within a company, women within the company, aren't raising this as an issue, or men within the company raising it as an issue, you know, there are a lot of people in tech here who 5 years ago probably didn't really know how much sexual harassment and kind of sexual misconduct was going on in the industry. So the media attention sort of informed people about this. And so then you have people being receptive to these arguments and this research that says, well, look, if you keep women happy and you make a hospitable working environment for women, then you're gonna attract female employees and mm-hmm. you're gonna retain them, and that is good business because you know most markets are you know half or more women, and women do a lot of the purchasing, and so if you don't have women in leadership positions, you don't have very many women in general in your workforce. You're probably not going to have the kind of perspectives that are going to help you maximize mm-hmm. you know, reaching that market. So I think that's a growing recognition that's come about because the media has made an issue about it, and that's come about because these women have made an issue of it. So you have that, and then you also have probably you know just the prospect of having your company's name, all over the newspapers.
Yeah.
You know, you have these other kind of things happening nationally, like Harvey Weinstein and Cosby and the issues of sexual harassment, sexual abuse by powerful men.
The Missouri governor's another one, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So these things kind of, you know, these things happen, and that keeps the problem in front of mind for people. And then, you know, when a story comes up here, there's that sort of base level of interest where people are like, oh, so there's, yep, more sexual harassment going on here again. Yep. You know, and so I don't think interest is going to go away in this. It does trend, up and down, and up in particular when it first sort of becomes a known issue. And then sometimes those things fall away completely. But I think that you have enough, and you also have women that are, they're really fed up with being treated badly in the workplace. And so women are going to continue to speak out about this too, and mm-hmm. And media will continue to report on it. And so that, you know, I think there will be. Yeah, I don't think this issue is going to, for the public, is going to kind of become not important. I think people may spend less time kind of consuming news about it as time goes on. But I think there'll be considerable interest in it, particularly here because it's so important to the industry, mm-hmm. and the industry is really kind of generally recognizing the importance of creating workplaces that are kind of happy and productive for everybody.
Well, I think that's a good place to end this podcast on that note. You know, we want to make women to be treated fairly, honestly. We understand and believe that women have a major role and a place in companies, and they deserve to be treated fairly and honestly. And I would encourage our listeners to heed those words and listen to what we've said here today. Ethan has a wealth of knowledge in this area, having reported on it for quite a bit of time now. So thank you for taking the time today, Ethan, to join us on this podcast. And hopefully it'll be a benefit to our listeners. We'd like you to subscribe to our Tough Things First website podcast. And also pick up our new book from Amazon or other major sources for books called The Zen of Zen. It's a new book that I recently released, and would invite you to get a copy of it. Anyway, thanks again, Ethan, for being with us, and talk to you again.
Thank you, Ethan.
Thanks, Ray and Delana. It's been a pleasure, and really appreciate your bringing attention to this topic. It's an important one.
It is.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Tough Things First, candid talk with Silicon Valley's longest-serving CEO, Ray Zinn. Drop by the contact page at toughthingsfirst.com for more about the book, more podcasts, and links to Ray's Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn pages to keep up with Ray Zinn's wisdom daily.